Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly.
Primally Pure just launched their Blue Tansy Body Butter, and it's more than a moisturizer. It's a full body exhale. This is their best-selling body butter formula, reimagined with calming Blue Tansy. It's a rich, whipped body moisturizer packed with barrier-building grass-fed tallow to deeply nourish dry, compromised skin. The texture is cloud-soft but ultra-replenishing. It melts in, protects against moisture loss, and leaves skin visibly smoother and more supple. And the scent? Soft Blue Tansy, lavender and sandalwood. Fresh, subtle, and elevated. If you already love the Blue Tansy deodorant or body oil, this is the perfect next step.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This is the High Hopes Podcast.
High Hopes.
It's a bunch of baseball nerds, well, without the computers, talking about the Philadelphia Phillies on radio.com and sports radio 94 WIP.
Yo, it is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast.
Interesting.
Jack Fritz and I have just been walking around the studio, just going up to him, going like, High Hopes?
Listen, we...
High Hopes?
Listen, we get very excited.
High Hopes?
To do the High Hopes Podcast.
It's our favorite thing.
It is what I think about during the week. It is what I think about when I go to bed. When I think, hey, it's almost Thursday, it's only because I'm thinking about the High Hopes.
I'm the same way. I basically just mail in my show on Thursdays just to get to 2 o'clock.
Well, I mail in every show knowing that the faster I mail it in, the quicker I can get the
Thursday. I think you're too busy watching Bryce Harper highlights to mail in the show.
So funny story. So my viewing this week has been, I finished the NOLA start in Boston, of course.
Beautiful.
Once
you start, you can't stop.
And then, yes. So, this week I was watching a Royals-Mariners game from April.
I can confirm, because I actually got a text from Jack saying, I'm watching Royals-Mariners from April, and I'll allow you to say what you said to me with your thoughts from the game, but that was the opening of the text.
Like, yes.
And these are the texts I get from you. Like, this is a very... It was not a surprising text to get. I'm watching Royals Mariners.
Good. I hope that I am there to always be consistent. Listen.
We're going
to
love Gene Segura.
The guy puts the ball in play whenever he wants. He's great. He is down. He is training with Michael Franco right now. He's watching an Instagram Live.
Is that uncomfortable? Or?
Well, I hope that Michael Franco is getting used to San Diego. anywhere but here. But I will say. For as anti-Franco as I am, mm-hmm. he has instituted a leg kick. He is more closed off, and the ball is flying off his bat.
This sounds familiar.
What? Close
I feel
stance
like
Franco?
I've heard this before. I can't place it.
Close stance Franco was one of the guiding principles of the High Hopes Podcast.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then when I watched him in the season and he went back to being wide open, it was no longer a guiding principle.
This one is a check in the Seltzer win column, is what we'll call it.
Okay. So,
but you had more thoughts on the Royals end of things as well.
Mike Moustakas is good, and he's like, I don't understand. There's this growing faction that like going from Michael Franco to Mike Moustakas would be a lateral move, and I just don't think that's just not true. Like, sure, if you look at the whole end of season numbers. Like, Michael Franco batted 19 points higher or whatever. Like, those were the most hollow numbers since Jahlil Okafor's rookie year.
Yes.
Like, if you want to talk about fake news and, like, fake news being running rampant throughout the country, I would say that you start with Michael Franco leading the Phillies in batting average last year. Like, that's just where I'm at. That's exactly where I'm starting at. There's no way that happened. That didn't actually happen.
No, so, it didn't. It's not real.
So, like, Mike Moustakas...
This is music to my ears, by the way.
Last year, Franco had a .2 war, which is horrible.
Not good.
Horrible.
It's aka barely above replacement player level.
He was basically benched twice. I mean, remember J.P.
Of course,
Crawford was in. And then,
if Crawford didn't get hurt,
so Crawford gets hurt. Franco comes in, And he goes on that six-week tear where it's like, wow, Michael Franco might be a guy. And he was batting like 330 during that run. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. He looked like a legitimate piece. And then at the end of the season, he's back down to like his final month, he batted 232 with like a 280 OBP.
He was the Michael Franco we know and don't love.
Right. So, and like, here's the thing is that Michael Franco, the thing that has crushed Michael Franco in the past is that he hits the ball on the ground and can't put the ball in the air. Yep. And that's the reason why he hasn't
And he's
been
not
able
to- fast enough to beat out any ground ball.
Right. Although he did get a stolen base off of Thor last year, that was the funniest day of baseball I can ever
remember
in a while. Yeah. Like they stole six bases off of Thor,
which is his problem, obviously. But yes,
it was funny that they exploited it.
Which is smart. Why, I don't know why more teams don't exploit it every time they play.
Right.
But anyway,
so Moustakas is a guy that will lift the ball, and if he's coming here, it's
in this
park,
baby.
Like he's played his, he hit 38 home
in
runs two
Kauffman
years ago.
Stadium. I don't know. A lot of people probably don't know park factors and all that. Kansas City, one of the toughest places to hit in all of baseball, is an extreme pitcher's park.
And he, 2 years ago, he's a year removed from the 38 home run season, mm-hmm. playing a majority of that at Kauffman Stadium. Last year, he hit, I think, 28 homers.
And traded the Brewers partway through the season.
And it's not
obviously.
Like Milwaukee is some kind of hitter's haven.
No, it's a better hitter's park than Kansas City for sure.
I mean,
but
Kansas City is
it's nightmare. Unbelievable. The fact that he hit 38 homers in Kansas City is a really impressive number.
Now, he had a higher walk percentage. Like, Mike Moustakas last year,
he's just a better baseball player than Michael Franco.
He was a 2.5 WAR player.
Yep.
Whereas Michael Franco is a .2. So for everyone that's
and
like,
even if you have issues with WAR, which I do too, I think we all do in certain cases and whatnot. But
well, pitching
I mean, that
WAR definitely.
Pitching WAR definitely. It's really the defensive stats that I have issues with
sure.
WAR. But I mean that is a seriously significant difference.
So if you're just looking like on the surface level, sure, Michael Franco and Mike Moustakas look the same. But they're not. They are not the same. Mike Moustakas is a way better player. You can actually rely on him a little bit, unlike Michael Franco. Like, he might have that six-week stretch where he's great, but ultimately he's gonna go back in the tank. I get that he's gonna be 26 this year. I don't think you can go into next year trying to make a run, trying to compete. You add in Bryce Harper, and I don't think you can trust a black hole like Michael Franco being in your lineup. And to go get a Mike Moustakas, It's a definite upgrade. It's only going to be a year or two contract, and then you can bring in Alec Bohm. And even if you sign Mike Moustakas to a 2-year contract, that doesn't take you out of the Arenado sweepstakes or the Rendon sweepstakes. Like, you can move Mike Moustakas if you have to.
Absolutely,
like, he's a very
stopgap.
Very fine stopgap that's probably going to hit 30 home runs here.
I would say it's a really nice stopgap for that type of thing you're looking for. I think he's a perfect fit for a year or two. Alec Bohm, by the way, up to what, 65th best prospect in all of baseball?
Yeah,
Baseball
honestly,
America.
Honestly, that's too
low.
It's too low.
I'm very excited about Alec Bohm.
People are really, really discounting Alec Bohm, like, and everyone's freaking out that he didn't hit a home run last year. It's like the guy was injured. Like, can we just give it a rest? The guy throughout his college career was a guy who didn't strike out and had legitimate pop. Was it like Chris Bryant level pop? No, he was not hitting 34 home runs in college and being ridiculous. But the power is going to be there.
It's real.
And he's just getting better. Like, relax with Alec Bohm. He is going to be a very good player.
I almost said star. 100% agree with you. And look, the 65th prospect in baseball, according to Baseball America, is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that is a legitimate, he's a legitimate prospect in their eyes. I mean, that is, you know, it's a legitimate spot. The top, anyone on the top 100 is an impressive number, you know? So, all right. Let's get to it. We got a lot to get into today. Shout out to Roy Halladay, Hall of Famer Roy Halladay. We'll get into that later. But let's get real quick. Obviously, nothing has really changed in the last week since we talked.
Well, I mean, today.
Well, except that's where I'm going. You threw me off for a second there. I'm like, wait, I'm like, what? Except today. AJ Pollock, the Dodgers. I think a nice contract for what it's worth for them. 4 years, $50 million. It's the right type of number for him. I thought he would get more. I think we can officially cross the Dodgers off the Bryce Harper suitor list.
Now, that might not stop Dodgers fans from thinking that. But, yeah, I would say that the Dodgers are out.
And they're out. Which means, and we've talked about how the Nationals are a paper tiger. Bryce Harper's going to be a Philly.
Yeah,
as we said on this show, it's just like, let's go. So what are your thoughts on why Bryce Harper is not a Philly yet? I have some thoughts, too.
Listen, Bryce, this is from me to you. And maybe Scott Boras. Because I'm sure that both of you are listening to this podcast.
I think it has to go through Scott Boras.
Right, so. Scott and Bryce, I know you listen to the podcast because you want to get the correct gauge on Phillies fans.
Which is the only place to come
right.
if they want
right.
that.
Now listen to me. This is very serious.
Real quick, for those who can't see, which is everybody listening to this, Jack is doing the thing where he's pointing to his eyes and he's like, look at me. Look
De Niro.
At me. Look at me.
It's
yes.
very De Niro.
Yes. Yes.
Just sign, baby. Just sign.
Just do it. Just do it.
Just come on home. What are you waiting for, buddy? Like, the Yankees are not going to get in board. The Dodgers are out. The Cubs and their fraud-ass Theo Epstein operation out there can't afford to pay anyone because of how
the World Series because of how 2 years ago but yes,
because of
yeah.
how bad of a GM that Theo Epstein is giving out contracts. They can no longer afford to play you with Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo because their fraud GM is bad.
Well, they have to sign those guys, that's for sure.
So
the Brizzo, as we like to call it,
Brizzo, just come on home.
Like, come on home, Bryce.
You don't have to keep on this like cute little waiting game. Like, you can just say, hey, Philly, like, I'm coming home. I want to be there. We can announce it next week. You can announce it on this podcast if you want to.
Sure.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, we'll do it. I had to think for a sec, but we'll do it.
We will take that.
If you want to announce it here, we're willing.
Being real for a second, I don't know what he's waiting for.
So I have a guess, and it's a purely... Look, this is 100% a guess, and it'll probably turn out to be true. I think they're waiting for after the Super Bowl. I think they're waiting for no football talk, no nothing. The Super Bowl's over. There's nothing but, you know, the middle of basketball season. Hockey no one cares about. Sorry, Jackie Pucks.
You know me. Love my
I think
Pucks.
They're waiting for after the Super Bowl. They're going to allow that Monday for people to react to Super Bowl, and then I think it's in those next couple days. I think they're waiting for the sports landscape, for ESPN, for everything, for only one thing to be there that matters, and it's Bryce Harper signed.
Well,
that's my guess, and I could be totally wrong, but at this point, we're trying to figure, like, we're saying, it feels like it's a lock that he's coming here. To your point, like, why? Why not yet? I think there could be other reasons, pure hypothetical guess, waiting for the landscape to be completely open and it to be the number one thing. Maybe it'll be the number one thing anyway, but just nothing else to interfere.
Well, what if he did it this Saturday?
Well, I don't think they're going to want us. You think a Saturday? I think a weekday.
I think it's going to be on a Saturday.
Really? Why?
Just a gut.
Ooh. All right.
I'm just
I like it.
I mean, if we're, I don't know. Just a gut.
So this Saturday, and look, again, if I think.
There's nothing going on this weekend.
Well, that's my point. If you're going to, I wouldn't, if it gets to Monday, I'd be surprised if they do it during Super Bowl week is my point. I guess if they did it over the weekend, possible. Or tomorrow, possible. I mean.
I wonder what
a lot of people talk of Pro Bowl, obviously. No.
Yeah, people love the Pro Bowl. Yeah. I kind of agree with your theory. Maybe they're just waiting for the most pub possible.
And again, this is me trying to make sense of something that right now just doesn't make a ton of sense.
And like, what's going on with Machado? Is he just going to have to take the White Sox offer?
I think he might. Well, I think it's one of those things where it's like, look, if the Phillies don't want to sign both, which we're kind of leaning towards that right now, right?
Yeah,
our guess. So if they don't want to sign both, I don't know what option he has. Like, I think he's hoping that some mystery team's coming in. The issue for Machado, which I don't understand, is once the Phillies sign Harper, it's like, your leverage is gone, bro. Like, I don't get it. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for it. I don't know what he's. If I were him, I would say, screw it. I'm signing first. I'm not going to get what Harper's getting anyway. I'm just going to sign and get the most I can.
Now, what do you make of every beat writer, every like national guy going silent on the Harper Machado stuff?
I thought it was really, and you tweeted about this. I thought it was really fascinating that maybe it means it's coming to a head,
or maybe they didn't.
Or it just means there's nothing new to report. Like they just
they were reporting nothing anyway.
Yeah, but there was at least the meeting got reported. The meeting's coming up. The reaction to the meeting, this and that. Like, there's no movement now. I mean, I'm for what it's worth, I'm surprised we haven't had a new mystery team report in here anywhere. Because at this point, like we've discussed, I don't know where else Boris and Lozano can go with this. I don't know what they can do to create more of a market than there has already been, because the market has played out in a really damaging way for their cases.
Also, it is kind of fitting that all the stuff is coming out today after the Hall of Fame stuff. So maybe they didn't want...
I think that's part of it, too. I mean, you saw, who was it? It was Jeff Passan, I think, reports... couple days ago or even yesterday, he's like, hey, get ready for a lot of relief pitchers to sign, like the blah, 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 whatever. Nailed it. I mean, we saw Brad Brock go today. We saw Hunter Strickland. I'm sure we're going to see others.
Well, I can tell you what, that Bryce Harper's not going to Seattle to play with Hunter Strickland.
He is not.
Do not like each other.
He is not. No, they're not fans of each other.
No, I would say no.
Yeah. Buster Posey will sit this one out as well, in case you're wondering. Yes.
I legitimately hate Buster Posey.
I hated him for that. I thought, and I didn't
for that.
I didn't blame him for that as much. I hate him for the Cousins thing and the home plate change and all that stuff. But
he has single-handedly,
in that spot, I didn't blame him as much because I thought Hunter Strickland was a total asshole and deserved to kind of get his ass beat in that situation, because I thought he was in the wrong, but still, even still, you're his catcher. Like, just do something to mollify the situation, whatever you got to do. Like, you don't have to, like, 100% defend your guy, but you have to somewhat have his back.
He's not a baseball player. He's a beta.
Hall of Famer, Buster Posey, right?
He has done more to hurt baseball than anyone involved in the sport with his stupid freaking...
Wow!
I hate the Buster Posey rule.
Wow!
It's the worst rule. It's the worst rule in sports.
I hate the rule. I agree with you. I think it's a dumb, stupid rule that was reactionary and wasn't thought out. It was like, oh, or the best player on the World Series champs got hurt. Oh! I think that was it. It was terrible.
Worst thing. So my thoughts on the Harper thing and why he hasn't signed yet is I kind of get the feeling that the Phillies, maybe Boris needs them to make another move to help out one of his clients while Harper's still out there. Like, Pollock signs today, and I thought Pollock was going to get hurt by Harper not signing yet, but turns out he didn't really get hurt. Like, he was signed first.
No, he still signed for less than he wanted. There were reports he was looking for 4 for $60, ends at 4 for $50. I think a bit of a discount off what you would expect, but I don't think he had a choice. I think there are certain players who are like, all right, I can't wait anymore. I gotta sign somewhere.
Yeah,
right?
So I'm wondering if Boris is kind of strong arming the Phillies that way, and maybe that's why the Moustakas stuff came out, and he was like, hey, sign my guy, and I'll bring you Bryce. I'll just make sure my guy is signed, and then I'll deliver you Bryce. Or maybe there's a guy on the team, like a Nick Williams, who's a Boris client.
Ah, I didn't realize Nick Williams is a Boris guy. That's interesting. So maybe get Nick Williams somewhere here where he's going to play before we make this move, taking him out of the line.
And it would kill all his value, right?
That's the point. I'm saying, like, the Phillies, if you trade him before you sign Bryce Harper, and even then, like, we've talked a lot. I'm guessing teams around baseball, we might not know what's going on, but I think the vast majority of teams have a feel for what's going to happen. So I think the leverage maybe is still less than it would be. But, yeah, once they sign Bryce Harper, it's like, all right, he's a bench guy. Why would we give you something valuable for a bench guy? It takes some of that leverage away.
And Boris doesn't want that to happen to one of his clients.
Absolutely.
He wants to see him play somewhere else. And
get a contract and make him more money, and of course.
And it's been reported that the Marlins have been interested in him, so maybe there's some kind of deal there, give him playing time. I don't know.
I saw, I can't remember who it was put out to. It was Heyman or one of those guys where it's Marlins were in on Nick Markakis, still looking to sign an outfielder or something. And I wanted to quote tweet and be like, Bryce Harper to the Marlins confirmed. And wow. I was like, not worth it.
Wow.
Not worth it.
Nick Markakis, by the way, very adorable signing by the Braves. A 35-year-old.
I think it's a fine signing.
He batted .250 at the end of last year.
Yeah, I know, but he ended up at .313 or whatever.
Second half.
Yeah. And look, I'm not a huge Nick Markakis guy, but for $6 million, that's fine. That's a fine. You can't rip this. It's $6 million. Are you kidding me?
35 years old.
It's fine.
Give me McCutcheon.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I know what you're saying. Obviously, as a player, I prefer McCutcheon, but 4 years, 50 for McCutcheon, 1 for $6 for Markakis. Markakis is probably a better deal. He probably is.
Did you see the Braves, by the way? They're
over-under.
83.
How is that? I was really shocked by that. I mean, and the Mets at 84.5, I know they made improvements. I was shocked by that, too. But the Braves being below the Phillies and the Mets and the Nationals, the Braves being they won the division last year. And they're young and growing. I was shocked.
And they have
that.
Ronald Acuna. Yeah, it's like it's
they
crazy.
Have the next Trout if there is one. But, and I don't think there is, but Acuna's that guy.
But the pitching staff isn't that great.
Right. And you assume Folty, Newcomb, all these guys who took step forward last year are going to regress some.
I mean, I will say that it's probably gonna be Mike Soroka season.
I really, really, really like Mike Soroka. I thought he was a guy who, when I saw him pitch last year, I was so impressed with him. And you know, obviously young, didn't get a ton of starts, a ton of opportunities, but I'm with you. I think Soroka's going to be. They got a lot of talent. It's Tucson. I mean, they got guys in their system who.
Tukey.
Gohara. I mean, they got a lot of young guys who have talent. So I think it's going to be interesting. It was interesting that the number was so low.
I will say this. The NL East is going to be the most fun. It's been maybe in my lifetime.
It's the best division in baseball.
Like, I can't remember a time in my life when there's four legitimately good teams.
Yep.
And when the Phillies add one of these guys, like. So let's say Harper signs here. Obviously, he just shunned the Nationals,
mm-hmm.
So that's going to make that rivalry even more.
It's great.
CBP South.
You've already got the Braves Phillies thing from last year, which will carry over two young teams. The rebuilds kind of aligning, and then everyone hates the Mets, so that works well too.
But I love when the Mets are good.
Oh, it's great
because the Mets Phillies is the best rivalry in the city. Like from a pure hatred standpoint, like
wow.
I think all the other ones are just more made up. Like
Eagles, Cowboys.
Yeah, like we got to hate the Cowboys. Like
I know what you're saying. There's more. It's more natural with the Phillies Mets because it is Philly, New York, and all that. But
okay, whatever. I'm just saying that like
I know what you're saying.
I'm saying 07 to 09, Phillies Mets
was the best.
In my lifetime, there's not been a better rivalry in this city. Now, you were around for the 90s.
Yeah.
Phillies... in college in the 90s? Is that right?
High school.
You were in college? Is that your senior year
Phillies
in
Braves,
1990?
Early 90s was fun. All right.
Yeah, but it was fun for 1 year, though.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
It was just 1 year.
Well, obviously,
sure.
the NFC East in
NFC
the
East
90s
in the 90s
was
legit. I'd have to think about it. It's a fun one. It's
I'm
a good question.
I mean,
Sixers Celtics in the 80s. I wasn't alive for it, but that's legit.
I thought that was like your high school days.
You're cute over there. Thanks, buddy. All right. Enough jokes about my age.
I'm just saying that
which is incredibly old.
The NL East.
People
is
listening
going,
think I'm like 50 right now. I know.
The NL East is going to be a lot of fun. Like I'm thoroughly looking forward to. The fan bases are going to legitimately not like each other for the first time in a while.
Forever. I mean, look. Well, I think also part of that comes from just like actually being able to care about a good Phillies team again. Because yeah, when you're bad, you don't really care about no matter who's good. You're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
For us to be able to, and then to your point, these teams all getting better, all competitive. It's going to be a tough division. Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother level to it, which is just awesome. Suck it. All right. We'll get to the Hall of Fame in a little bit. Any other kind of rumblings or news that hit you this week? Still a lot of names out there. Dallas Keuchel, those types of guys. Kimbrel is a name the Phillies have been locked into a lot.
I think they're kind of just wait. Like I think
waiting
everything
on,
is,
waiting on it.
Is waiting on everything else. I don't think they're going to make a move for a starter unless it's like a Keuchel end of February, early March. He's not signed anywhere and he doesn't want to play for the Reds. Maybe they get him on like a cheaper contract. Maybe that's like something they could do.
Which we would be fine with in that case.
Yeah, I'd be fine with it. So then you're heading into next season and the Phillies have to make sure like they have a bunch of guys, right? The Phillies have a bunch of guys with talent, but you're not 100% sold on them being a part of the future. So like when you're looking at the staff next year, like you need a Nick Pivetta breakout season.
Which, by the way, quick tangent. A lot of Nick Pivetta breakout talk out there.
Listen, there's been a lot.
Like it's
every day there's a new Nick Pivetta breakout season
and
article.
Hey, come on. All right. Back up off our corner, all right? That's the Jack Fritz corner right there. I want Jack Fritz credited. I want the High Hopes podcast credited. Anyone talking about a Nick Pivetta breakout? Give us some credit.
Say the name.
It's not that hard. It's a great name. High Hopes.
I'm just saying that after 2 years ago, when we had like a 6+ ERA, mm-hmm. we came into the season. Nick Pivetta's a guy.
Yes.
He's going to be very good.
Yes.
And for most of last season, he maybe looked smart on that.
Yep.
Tapered off there a little bit in the middle. Got people off the scent. Guess who never stops tracking that
Never.
Scent?
Never.
So I'm just saying.
I mean, some of the things you've said about Nick Pivetta are so absurd that I don't know how anyone could associate anything else with Nick Pivetta, but Jack Fritz loving him.
Just saying, if there's Pivetta pieces out there, just make sure you're at the boy or at High Hopes.
It's not that hard to do.
Like Pivetta is the guy.
Like the MLB Network did when they used our podcast. They said High Hopes pod.
Yeah.
Not that hard.
That's all I'm asking for.
Credit.
And so I was reading, so Stolens wrote a piece about High Hopes, not about High Hopes. John, if you want to write a piece
John,
about High
Hopes.
John,
you're welcome to write a piece on High Hopes.
I mean, you can do it. He wrote a piece on Pivetta. And
great guy. Love John.
And yes. And I was reading it, and I wasn't trying to like argue with John. I was just pointing out a difference in philosophy. So the one thing he labeled was that Nick Pivetta's slider was going to be like a main. Like, that's the third pitch he needs to hone in. And I just like pretty much disagree with that because there was that weird 6 weeks or I would say a month stretch last year where he just lost his curveball.
Yeah,
like it
absolutely.
Was like a stretch where he could not throw his curveball.
Yeah, it started with that Mets game but it was in the middle of that the Little League game.
Yes, and then started getting shelled.
Yeah, and it was so disappointing.
Yeah, because he would go through four innings. Like I remember the Nationals game on Sunday night, mm-hmm. he was dominating.
Yes,
and then he fell
and
apart.
Then he lost it. Yep, I vividly.
So what I'm saying is that the slider is only really used by Pivetta because he couldn't use his curveball. Like he couldn't find the grip on his curveball, so he had to use his slider so he wasn't just getting shelled out there. And Matt Winkleman wrote a piece about how he struggles with runners on base and like how everything skyrockets. When Pivetta and Nola are out of the windup together, their numbers are pretty much in line,
mm-hmm.
which is really
impressive.
Gives me butterflies.
Yeah.
And then when he goes to the stretch, Pivetta falls apart.
Sure.
And he definitely
Is a thing that we've seen with pitchers in the past. It's a thing that happens.
Right. So Pivetta, when he goes to the stretch, kind of falls apart a little bit. I feel like when I watch Pivetta, he doesn't totally have a plan for especially left-handed hitters and when guys get on base. Left-handed hitters especially. Like, when I'm looking at it from that perspective, he needs to have something that goes away from left-handed hitters. And I just think that more than a
slider's going to go in on him.
More than a slider, where when I'm thinking tunneling perspective, like, it just doesn't look the same. Like, when you, from a tunneling perspective, you want all of your pitches coming
to
out
look
this,
exactly the same or as close to as the release point, the motion. You want it to be as consistent as it can be.
And when I watched Pivetta's slider last year, it wasn't that way. Like, his curveball and fastball were two different looks. But the changeup is something that you can learn to throw out of the same arm slot and looks natural, looks normal. You can throw a four-seam changeup because he throws a four-seam fastball, so it has the same kind of spin on it. Like, I would rather him perfect a changeup. I think a changeup is more important.
It makes more sense for his repertoire.
It's more important to a Nick Pivetta breakout than honing in a slider that doesn't really help your attack against left-handed hitters. Having a good changeup that he can put on the outside corner that guys can kind of can lean out in front of the plate, and then he can backdoor at 96 right on their hands.
Yeah. I mean, even if he throws it 15% of the time, 10% of the time, it can make a difference.
And what I'm saying is, I would also like if you're going to learn, if you already have a good slider grip, just make it a cutter. Like, if you want to have a cutter, that's perfectly fine from a tunneling perspective. I just think for Pivetta to reach his peak, I don't think a slider is the best plan for that. I think a changeup is the best plan because from a tunneling perspective, his slider didn't look as natural as I think a changeup would.
It's fascinating stuff, Jack. That was I very rarely am interested in what you're saying, but that was no. I'm kidding. I love what you say.
I think a lot about Nick.
That was really interesting stuff, and hopefully we can get Nick on this pod at some point.
It's our white whale.
Yes,
Nick.
And then you could talk to Nick and be like, Nick, listen. You could do the eye thing. Look at me. Look at you. We got this.
Listen. And if he wants to get really crazy, and if he wants to actually be a Cy Young candidate and strike out 300 guys a year. Learn a
Which
splitter.
Which is so hard to do, by the way.
Learn a splitter.
You know, real quick, you know how many Phillies pitchers have ever struck out 300 guys in a season?
Schilling did it twice. Carlton.
End of list.
That's it.
Only two pitchers in Phillies history to ever strike out 300 guys in a season.
Okay.
Regular season only, obviously.
Obviously, it's borderline impossible.
It's hard. Especially now with the way rotations of bullpens are. But 250, 260, whatever. I mean, just look. I mean, 10 per 9, something like that. I mean, that's real deal stuff. And I know at times he was higher than that last year, obviously.
Yeah. Listen, Pivetta, I forget who put it out this week, but he was like, either Nick Pivetta is the biggest outlier we've ever seen, or 2019 is going to be his breakout year.
Yeah, well, look.
I think that's the best way to put it in perspective.
Well, it's a great point because they're not wrong. When you look at the history of guys who have struck out as many guys per 9 as he does and walked as few guys as he does per 9, like, it usually leads to breakouts, to great pitching. I mean, just the numbers bear it out.
Yeah, I mean, when you strike out as many guys as he does and walk as little as he does, that usually lends itself to a breakout.
Exactly.
Now, I don't think you can just look at the numbers and predict that, because when you physically watch him, he doesn't have a good plan against left-handed hitters right now. Like, that's just the way it is. And I think if he learns either a splitter or a split changeup, they both come out of the same kind of arm slot, and I think it kind of work. It might even be a better feel for than a circle change or whatever.
Like, and the thing I love about Pivetta, I love his mentality. I love he's a pitcher. He's a bulldog. You know, he goes out there, and like you said, he needs to do better with the planning. But in terms of going out there with the fire that I want to see, I mean, he brings it.
Yeah. Now, I will say that he is for most of his career so far, he's been a thrower rather than a pitcher.
It's a great way to put it.
So, and like, same thing with Velasquez, even though there was a little bit of Velasquez. But the main point is that they better be right in how they're evaluating their guys. You need a Pivetta breakout year. You need Arrieta to not go through months where he's just terrible. And you better hope that one of Eflin or Velasquez can kind of replicate what they did for the first 4 months of last season, before the last two, which kind of just fell apart.
Yep.
Because if you're not going to sign anyone, then you need that. And I understand what a lot of people have said, and I think this makes a lot of sense, is like, from whispers we've heard, is that they're going to wait till the deadline and then trade for a starter.
Which makes a ton of sense. It really does.
Go through the first half, see what your guys have.
Get better value on some of these guys who, you know, you're paying for a half a season less of them and all that type of stuff.
Now, the danger is that if, like, Madison Bumgarner goes out and turns back into Madison Bumgarner,
that you have to pay more to get him and all that. And then also, there's also a danger in the sense that right now it does feel like that market is very thin, whereas come that time, there's a chance, at least, that there are multiple suitors trying to bid against you for their services. All right, coming up in just a little bit, we gotta find out about Jack's confrontation, we'll say, with a Philadelphia sports media legend. We'll get into that.
Okay.
But Hall of Fame. Obviously, macro discussions about the Hall of Fame are something we can have, but let's first start with the fact that Doc, Roy Halladay, I know one of your all-time favorites, one of the people you
idolize. For anyone that was playing baseball during that time, and especially pitching during that time, whether you were 12 or pitching in college, like, he was a guy that everyone looked up to. Mm-hmm. Like, from the
things, work ethic perspective to the actual getting it on the field and what he did.
To
being just a great guy.
Yeah, and a doctor on the mound.
Yep. And that nickname for a reason.
Right. You know? So I'm so happy he got in first ballot. He was arguably the best pitcher in the game for 9 years.
Yes, and what doesn't get talked about enough, the best pitcher in the game in one of the toughest divisions to ever pitch in, when you had those Red Sox and Yankees teams of the late 90s, 2000s. And the Jays were terrible. And he's gone up against those teams, you know, I mean, playing both those teams 40 times a year for his team at least. So multiple starts against the best hitters in baseball year after year after year is really impressive.
Yeah, so I'm glad he got in. Obviously, like, it absolutely sucks he won't be there. I kind of want to go. Like, I want to go
see
him.
From what I heard, Cooperstown is projecting their highest turnout ever. Really? I'm sure Roy's a big part of that. Obviously, Mariano Rivera, a big part of that as well. Yankees fans going up.
First ever unanimous? Mel Rivera?
And look, he should be unanimous. So should have many other guys who are in the Hall of Fame. I think I'm happy to see one of the dumbest things in sports finally going away. The whole, well, Babe Ruth wasn't 100%, so I can't vote for him to be in. It's so asinine. It made me so mad year after year. It was just are they a Hall of Famer? Are they a high-level Hall of Famer? Yeah. Vote him in the Hall of Fame then. I hated it. I hated the 100% thing. So happy to see that barrier knocked down. I'm sure we'll see a lot more 100%ers. Yeah. Derek Jeter next year could be another
one. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to put in a guy that never won an MVP, unanimous.
Mo should be 100%.
He's the best ever at what he did. So, yeah, Mo should have been a Hall of Famer. Unanimous.
Very happy to see Edgar Martinez get in as well.
Yeah,
it's well deserved. Last year on the ballot
of all time, probably.
And I mean, for what it's worth, when you think about it, I was thinking about this the other day when he got in. I mean, probably a top 10 pure hitter of my lifetime. I mean, legitimately, he had a career average of .315, .933 OPS. I mean, he was an amazing hitter.
I think he had a career average against Doc of like .542.
I mean, think about that. I mean, that's insane. And the fact that he played in Seattle, the fact that he was a DH, he just didn't have that same sort of notoriety. And it's a man who deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, we won't talk about what Harold Baines has done for the level of Hall of Famer, but you taking that type of thing out, I mean, Edgar Martinez better than a lot of people in the Hall of Fame already.
Yeah, I would agree. So he's in. Mussina, like, I get the Mussina case.
Yeah, I think he's a Hall of Famer. It's just not... He's not a high-level Hall of Famer.
Listen, the guy was never... He's like the fourth best pitcher in baseball at his peak, I would say.
Well, all right, so let me counter that with, do you think Bobby Abreu should get in next year? Okay, good. So we're on the same page with that. Listen, because a lot of the people who have similar outlooks on baseball that you and I do, you know, a statistically driven or interested in that type of stuff, looking at all different types of things, a lot of those people, I'm assuming your host at night, probably one of those people, the way he thinks about it, who think Bobby Abreu is a Hall of Famer, and I know the numbers are there. Clearly, you look at the numbers, you compare him to other Hall of Famers. Sure, I'm sorry. I watched Bobby Abreu his whole career. He was not a Hall of Famer. At no point was he a top 10?
He never
top finished, 7 player in baseball? Never!
He never finished top 10 in MVP, though.
Like, there you go. I mean, that I'm sorry. Like, that matters. It matters who you're playing at the same time with, comparing him against those guys. I think
the eye test is more important.
I totally agree with you. Like, we get so wrapped up in the stats thing, especially with this sport compared to all others. I am so with you, Jack. I watched Bobby Abreu's whole career. He wasn't a Hall of Famer. He just wasn't.
He's not a Hall of Famer.
He's not.
And people are putting his numbers against Tony Gwynn.
I saw that. And it's your buddy Ryan Spader.
I love Ryan.
Yeah, he's great. I love his information. One of the best follows on Twitter. Ace of Spader on Twitter. Like, just a great follow. So much information. Fascinating stuff. Dude, that's asinine. Like, I'm sorry, man. Old enough to remember Tony Gwynn's peak. Tony Gwynn was...
That was during your college
100 trip? Times that... Yeah. 100 times later than Bobby Abreu was. He just was.
No, I know. And, like, everyone is getting a little bit too obsessed with the numbers.
I agree.
Like, Stone Hall of Famers, like, when I watched Doc Halliday for his peak, he was best pitcher in baseball.
Yep.
When I watched Mariano Rivera, best closer I've ever seen in my life.
Yep.
Now, I mean, there's players at their peaks that are probably... Listen, my favorite Mariano Rivera stat...
I love that you tweeted this out. This is, this is one of the more unreal stats that you could ever hear.
More people have walked on the moon than have scored on him in the postseason.
He's pitched something like 140-something innings or something in the playoffs with 11 runs. It's unbelievable. 0.7 ERA in the playoffs. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's...
And a 0.7 whip, for what it's worth.
Right.
Just unbelievable.
He's... When I watched him, he was a Hall of Famer. I got into baseball at the end of Edgar's career, but... just from watching some
old stuff. Guy remembers Edgar. He was
right.
Great.
And Mussina's kind of in the same thing. Like, I thought he was a fine pitcher, but like, if he's a Hall of Famer, then Cliff Lee's a Hall of Famer.
See, I don't think that's one of those things where, and again,
or Johan Santana.
Now, see, and I agree with you. Like, their peaks were probably better, but that's where you do have to. And I am more of a peak guy than a longevity guy. I care more about how great were you for a certain period of time. That's one of those things where you do have to find a way to make gradations one way or the other. And the fact that Mussina pitched as long as he did, won 270 games, not that wins matter, but like the numbers...
Well, he did in the AL East.
Yeah, and the numbers are there. It's impressive enough to me where he's a borderline in for me. I would put him in, but it's like the lowest level of Hall of Famer, but I think he's a Hall of Famer.
Yep, and I also think Curt Schilling's a Hall of Famer.
Well, I think Curt Schilling is a better Hall of Famer than Mike Mussina. Curt Schilling should be in before Mike Mussina. Granted... Awful guy. Can't stand Curt Schilling.
I was asking Joe yesterday, like, do they let him make a speech?
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
Like,
I mean, that's the interesting thing about Schilling, and it's why, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer and is absurd, but he never cheated on baseball. Like, he never did anything like that. It's just that he's, like, as big an ass as you could possibly be.
He's a bad dude.
He's the worst, but he's a Hall of Famer. He was a Hall of Famer.
Well, I mean, Ty Cobb's all of it.
Ty Cobb killed a guy. Really? He killed a guy. What are we doing here? Look, the Hall of Fame is not a moral judgment. Oh, was he a good guy? Was he a bad guy? No, sorry. It's about what they did on the field. And Curt Schilling is a stone cold Hall of Famer in my mind.
Yep.
So, interesting next year, though, because Jeter, the only lock, and I think probably the only first time Hall of Famer next year, it's Cliff Lee, it's Abreu, it's guys like that next year who I think are not. And no. Certainly not first ballot Hall of Famers, and I don't think Hall of Famers to begin with. What do you think about, I think the big three, and Larry Walker's in a similar type of percentage, and I think Larry Walker's a tough one for me. I think he's probably a Hall of Famer, but it's another thing with the Colorado part of it. It just, I never felt...
I'm surprised that Griff's not getting more.
Yeah, well, there's similar types of... Walker is so tough to judge. I don't know what to do. I mean, his numbers are insane when you look at some of the seasons he had in Colorado.
Yeah.
And he did have a really nice career. I don't know if I put Larry Walker in. Bonds, Clemens, Schilling. And they're different cases.
Manny?
Well, Manny's not getting in. I mean, it's just what it is. He's 22%. It's a shame. I would put Manny in a second, in a heartbeat. Manny Ramirez is a Hall of Famer.
I just don't understand how you can justify Bonds and Clemens and then not put Manny in.
Well, I mean,
neither failed it twice. Is that what people?
Well, they didn't
get
caught in baseball. I mean, neither failed a test in baseball. The Mitchell report for Clemens and Bonds didn't get Balco, but he never got caught while he was playing. Look, they all took steroids. That's my look.
You can moral judge it as much as you want.
I agree with you. That's my point. Is either it's and to make it even further, there are absolutely players in the Hall of Fame who took steroids.
Pudge Rodriguez.
Yeah, Pudge Rodriguez. Absolutely. We don't know that for sure. We're pretty sure he took steroids. We don't know. Part of those Texas teams, the way he looked, the way he grew, you think he did. Again,
and people are
not casting aspersions.
People are going to put Ortiz in.
Absolutely. And he actually kind of got caught. Like, didn't, but kind of did. You know, there were enough rumors out there. Point being that we don't know who did, who didn't. Barry Bonds is the greatest baseball player I've ever seen in my lifetime. Period. End of story. Roger Clemens, top two or three pitcher I've ever seen in my lifetime. Maybe the best. Certainly the best numbers-wise. They got to be in the Hall of Fame. It's silly. If I'm going to take my daughter, I used to always say my kid because I didn't have a kid, but now I have a kid. If I'm going to take Zoe Rose Seltzer to the Hall of Fame, to Cooperstown, like my dad did when I was a kid, and it was the best time, and it was part of why I love baseball, and go there, and I'm showing her the history of baseball, and then I get to the 90s and 2000s, and I'm like, oh, yeah, the best player I ever saw played then, but he's not here. How stupid is that? It's a museum that is supposed to tell the history of the sport. And all the John Feinsteins of the world with the character clause. Really? Ty Cobb is in the Hall of Fame yet again. All right? Enough. It's so stupid, Jack.
Mm-hmm. Now I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Roy, all right. You just talked about Clemens as one of the three best pitchers you've ever seen in your life.
Yes. And that's so, just, you know.
Okay. So where does Doc rank amongst the best pitchers you've physically seen?
Well, Pedro Martinez in his prime was the best pitcher I've ever seen in my life. I have no problem saying that. After that, it's really interesting. I think Clemens is in that next group. I think Clayton Kershaw's in that next group.
Randy Johnson.
And Randy Johnson's in that next group. And then I think that Doc is right there after those guys, or right with those guys in that general group.
Yeah, so I think Pedro's the best. I would say Clemens, because he was my guy. Before Halliday, Clemens was my guy.
And I would put Clemens too, when you, because again, that gets to my point where Yeah. At some point, you do have to take in the whole mass of all they did. And, I mean, Clemens won the Cy Young, what, five times, six times? I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's
so
crazy.
Randy, I would say, then Halliday.
And then Kershaw.
I would say Johan Kershaw. No, Kershaw, Johan.
You can't put Kershaw to Johan. I mean, you can't put Johan and Kershaw. But I know what you're saying. I think Johan is one of those guys who, I don't think people remember how dominant he was for that 5-6 year stretch, whatever it was, how great he was.
Uh-huh.
Why I don't think he's Hall of Famer, he just didn't do it long enough for me.
Right.
But he's up there. When Johan was at his best those few years, he was pretty great.
I think that's the top six. And then Cliff Lee, CeCe.
I'm sure there are guys DeGrom. We're forgetting.
DeGrom season last year is ridiculous.
One of the best seasons we've seen.
If we're talking peaks, 2015 Arrieta.
Yeah, I mean, are you kidding? Best second half in the history of baseball.
Yeah, so listen, I'm just happy Doc's in. Like, I think he's a Hall of Famer. Watching him on a night in, night out basis, the way he carried himself, how hard he worked, how much of a model citizen he was in the game. Very, very happy he's in. I'm glad he's the first ballot Hall of Famer, because he's a Hall of Famer regardless.
And that's another thing I hate. And I understand that's the way it works, but like, what's different from the first?
I also don't care
what
cap he goes in. I know Brandy came out yesterday and said that they're not wearing a cap.
Yeah, can we talk about this for a second? Because this was actually a thing. I can't believe people care about this. Like, his family said he wants to wear a Major League Baseball cap. Guess what? Awesome.
Yeah.
Go with what his family. And on top of that, and I know there are people within the city and all that. Like, look, Major League Baseball usually chooses for themselves, as you know, we discussed last time, because Wade Boggs took a bunch of money from the Rays to go in a Rays hat. When it's absurdity.
Legend.
I love you, Wade. But having said that, I think that if Major League Baseball had to choose, if it had not, and I think that they're doing the right thing to honor his family's wishes, I think that is what they should do, period. But let's be real. If Major League Baseball were choosing, he'd be in a Blue Jays cap.
Yeah. And he said he wanted to go in a Blue Jay. So
he should go in as a Blue Jay. Look, I loved having him here, and I know he only played in the playoffs here and all that, but like, he spent his career as a Blue Jay. He spent 15 years in that organization. Like, I know we love Philadelphia and all that, but like, come on, guys. Let's get over ourselves here for a second. He should go in as a Blue Jay, and I'm happy he's going in the way he wants and his family wants and whatever. And they said it's to honor both cities, which actually is a really nice thing. They're saying we don't want to choose because we love both. But, I mean, he's a Blue Jay.
Yeah.
So.
That's fine.
I think we can get over that. All right. Final thing. Jack Fritt.
Yeah.
The deacon. The dean of Philadelphia Phillies sports media. The man that Jack Fritt and I can only hope to be someday. Jim Salisbury, of the best. You and Jim had a little thing.
No, I don't think,
here's the thing. I don't think Jim knew yet a thing, but you knew.
I got out alphaed by
Jim.
I got out alphaed by Jim Salisbury.
Get him.
Little context. So last week was the Phillies prospects caravan or whatever.
Yes.
So
did you tell Mickey Moniak you loved him, by the way, or did you not?
So this is part of being out alphaed by Jim Salisbury.
Okay.
Is that so all the prospects, not all the prospects, Moniak was in, Adonis Medina was in, Kyle Doughy was in, not Adam Haseley, which I was a little disappointed in.
It was supposed to be.
Yeah,
didn't show
he was
That's
not there.
Shame.
So
heard you were coming. He was a little worried he might, you know, be all up on him a little too much.
Yeah, I was going to roast his leg kick and say, figure it out, buddy. That's not how you hit. If you want to reach your peak here, also have a bigger load. Get working with Jason Ochard immediately. So first off, you know, Jim, we've been walking around, walking the clubhouse. So there's a stigma of radio people with the beat writers where, like, don't ask any questions because you're idiots and you're not around here very often. And I was trying to be like, I'm not an idiot. Do you know who I am? Have you heard of my podcast? It's called High Hopes. And if you ever write a Pavetta piece.
Oh, do you know who I am?
So, like,
Jack Fritz, baby.
So I just didn't want to. I didn't want to be embarrassing to the radio station, so I kind of didn't really ask any questions. Anyway, so we're in the Moniak scrum, and I'm trying not to get too close because I don't want Moniak to be a little freaked out at how much I love him.
Yeah,
and
I could feel it radiating.
I did change my Twitter bio to Life, Liberty, and Mickey Moniak second half splits. And I was so close to asking him if I should make that my bio, but I did it anyway.
You just went anyway. It's so, because he probably would have said no, so probably good you didn't ask.
So we're in the scrum. And, like, I'm waiting to ask my question. I just wanted to ask if he's talked to Jason Ochard yet. Because I don't really have anything else. I let everyone else handle the...
Yeah, you just want to know.
Listen,
we love Jason Ochard. Jason Ochard, one of our favorites at the High Hopes podcast.
And I wanted to let everyone else get their fluff pieces in because I was going to ask
you
the
hard hitting. You wanted a serious question that matters. Like, that's what matters.
So Salisbury, first off, we're in the scrum. And Salisbury gets in, like, 9 questions in a row. And I'm just like,
he's allowed to. He's the king.
I'm like, is anyone else gonna break in? Because no, because Jim Salisbury, everyone's like, oh, he's such a nice guy. Guy's a hawk.
He's an alpha.
The guy's a hawk. He's an alpha. And I gotta say, he kept the microphone up to Mickey Moniak the whole time. My arm was getting tired. I didn't want to hold it up much longer.
Yeah.
I had to switch arms and then go back to my right arm.
Yeah. No.
And my right arm was
not for Jim.
And my right arm was sore the next day. Salisbury's got it right up to next to him. So this is my first time really in the media setting. And I just want to say that for everyone that thinks Jim Salisbury is like this nice little guy, guy's an alpha male, guy's a hawk, and I got alpha'd by Jim Salisbury.
You got out alpha'd by Jim Salisbury.
I know.
This is amazing. Listen,
I know.
It and made
I,
my day when you texted me.
I was like, this guy is just.
So the big takeaway is Jim Salisbury is a badass.
Yeah.
Don't mess with the man.
Yeah. I was like, man, I did not expect this from Jim. He had like 9 questions in a row to Mickey. And then at the end, when everyone was like starting to disperse, I was like, hey, Mickey. Hey, Mick.
No. What was the answer?
I said, hey, Mickey, have you talked to Jason Ochard
yet?
Yeah,
what did he say?
And he gave me this like, basically, I don't really know who that is.
Nice!
Which I don't think is a great sign.
No.
Mickey,
I'm sure he will.
I suggest you get on it. But yeah, he was talking about how like, you know, he started lifting the ball more, and his friends came down and made him feel more comfortable. And how like McCutchen was at like was hung out with the U.S. team at the World Series in 2015.
Like that.
And now they're playing together, and he's excited to get to big league camp. Life, Liberty, and Mickey Moniak second half splits. Also, I talked to Kyle Dowie. No one else talked to Kyle Dowie. I don't think anyone else really knew who he was. Actually, that's not true. Matt Breen talked to Kyle Dowie.
Okay.
And I went over after Matt Breen, and he's jacked. Like, legitimately jacked. And I walked up to him and I said,
Matt Breen is jacked, huh?
No, not Matt Breen.
I know.
And I walked up to Kyle Dowie and I said, is it fair that some people in the media, aka me, have labeled you as Josh Hader 2.0? And he did not confirm that he is Josh Hader 2.0, but he did say he took it as a compliment. So,
he should. I mean, as long as we're talking about Josh Hader, the pitcher, not the
right.
person.
We're not talking about the Twitter accounts. I'm just talking about Josh Hader, the pitcher, who is disgusting.
Oh, so good.
So we're hoping that Kyle Dowie can become that. Other than that, I was weirdly impressed by how much in similar size I was to these guys.
Ooh, it lit the fire, didn't it?
I was just saying.
Lit the fire, didn't it?
I wanted to whisper in their ears, could have been me.
That would have been so creepy. Oh, I wish you had done that.
Yeah.
I'm like the like, same size. What is happening right
I'm
now?
I'm the same size as Adonis Medina. And like that's another thing. It's like, I didn't want to ask. So Adonis Medina had the translator with him.
Uh-huh.
And I want to ask like, hey, I think you get better at finishing. Like, are you working on anything like that? Because then it just would have been like a really tough, like I want to ask.
Translation.
Like, yeah.
It would have been awkward. Finishing what? What are you talking about?
Like when I watch him, he doesn't. Adonis Medina's ceiling, I think it may be higher than Sixto's.
Whoa! Because, dude, Sixto, by the way, the number 13 prospect in the top 100 in baseball America. Just saying.
I have visions of Sixto all the time. Anyway, Adonis Medina, I'm just saying that if he really worked on finishing down and getting down the mound, I think he can throw even harder.
Wow.
He
kind of. I mean, he's already high 90s.
I know. He like cuts himself off. I don't know. It's mainly because he's super athletic and he has to learn how to pitch a little bit more. But Medina's really, really good. And I would, he's another guy, like, I'm not sure I want to move him. Like, I kind of want to keep everyone.
Ooh, keep them all,
now,
baby.
Now that they're all my children, I wanted them to all stay around forever. So, yeah, I got Alfalfa by Jim Salisbury.
What a great,
He runs that place.
Shout out to Jim.
I learned that very quickly.
Jim, if you ever want to come on the High Hopes podcast and then out-alpha him again on his own show, we'll take you.
I don't think I can do it again.
All right, so we'll say it as we always do. Hopefully we'll have an emergency pod coming.
Well, all right, I got two more things.
Ooh, I was going to final thought things or in addition to your final thoughts?
I got one take, and then I'll save the other one for final thoughts.
Lay it on me.
If the Phillies are serious about getting Mike Trout, they need to develop their guys better. Like, you can't be spending money on Andrew McCutchen and then expect to add in a Mike Trout. So you need Ammoniak to fill left field. You need Bone to be third base. You need Luis Garcia to be shortstop. In order for them to really be a serious contender in the Mike Trout sweepstakes, they can't keep giving money to aging veterans because their prospects aren't along yet.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is that, like, the addition of Jason Ochard, the other driveline guys, their investment in developing their minor leaguers as much as possible, I think is crucial when you're evaluating the payroll for a potential Mike Trout addition. Because mm-hmm. you're going to have Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, probably Bryce, for like $32 to $35 million a year. Like, I think if I had to guess right now, Harper signs here for $8,280. Like, I think that's what he's
going to do. See, I think he's going to cross the 300 threshold. Even if it's deferred money and stuff, I think they want that number out there.
Okay, so how about this? We'll come to an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So $8,280 is going to be the guaranteed.
And then there's the extra years or whatever.
Which gets him over $330.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It'll be something like that. I think you're right. I think the heart of the contract could be something like that, whereas the sticker price will be over $300.
Right. The AAV is the only thing that matters.
Absolutely.
$35 million puts him ahead of Granke.
And opt-outs and all that stuff matter in context. But
right.
Yes.
So you're going to – so if we're projecting the offseason during that time, you're going to have the Harper contract, a Hoskins contract, a Nola contract. That's three pretty big money guys. You can't be dishing out $50 million to Andrew McCutchen. You can't be trying to –
oh, I agree.
You can't be trying to fill in holes because you're going to have to lay out $40 million for Mike Trout. So the development of the young guys is just as important in landing Trout as clearing the bankroll.
I like that. I think it's a good take. All right, final thoughts, Fritzy.
Final thoughts is that Odubel Herrera has been working out with Miggy every single day this offseason.
Only guy down there.
He is the first guy
in
camp. He ended last season at 232. That's how much he weighed. Not as bad on the average, even though it almost got there.
Close.
He was weighing 232 pounds at the end of last year. He is down to 212, which is
strong.
I'm here for it. He was there every day at 7:30, and they were worried that he wasn't going to be there because he's been a bit aloof in the past. There at 7:30, he was working out with Miggy. He's down 20 pounds. Odubel Herrera is going to finish top 10 in MVP this year.
Whoa! What? I love it.
He's going to finish top 10 in MVP.
Hashtag ProDubel, baby.
He is too talented not to, and now that he's
going to put it all together.
And 27 is when a player reaches his peak.
True. Very true. I think that's the thing with Odubel that we don't talk about enough is that he's only 27. Right. It feels like he's been here for so long. He's been like the best player on the team for a couple of years, all that stuff. Still a young guy.
And here's the other thing. Odubel Herrera was never played above double A. Like, so
point. He was a Rule 5 guy. That's a great point.
He never had the development.
It's a really, you know what? That's something that is not talked about ever.
And
the
no
fact
talks
that
about
he didn't
how,
have that type of development.
No one talks about how he was a second baseman playing center field.
Well, he was a second baseman, yeah.
And everyone's
absolutely.
Like, well, why aren't you a Gold Glover out there yet?
Yeah, because I was a second baseman my whole life.
So
I just learned this.
Right. Odubel, I think he is completely locked in, completely focused. If you get 162 games, I'll say 145 games of locked in Odubel Herrera.
Oh my God. I mean, that's the difference between first place and a wild card potentially, or that type of thing. I mean, it could be massive difference.
So, the official Jack Fritz prediction, Odubel Herrera, top 10 MVP voting, and he's an all-star once again.
That's a bold prediction.
Don't care.
I like it. My final thought, rate and review the podcast. Do it for Jack. It makes him so happy. And also,
a good week of reviews.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, we got like three more.
You
got to
send me some of these so I can check them out.
Yeah, listen.
Give us reviews. It helps
us grow the podcast.
Yes.
We want to be the official podcast of the Phillies, all that fun stuff. Help us grow it. We really appreciate it.
And you guys are the best, so you can help us. We love the High Hopes listeners so much. I'm getting there. I know what you're talking about. Maybe something coming, right? Well, We're getting t-shirts. That was my other final thought.
The first thing, listen, if I see a High Hopes listener at Citizens Bank Park with a High Hopes t-shirt, I will come up to you with tears in my eyes, say I love you, and I cannot wait for it.
And then I'll buy you a beer.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Drink a choice, or food a choice, whatever. Yes, I'll buy you whatever you want.
If I see a human being other than me and you,
yes,
and people related to us,
yes,
wearing a High Hopes shirt, you will never see a happier person.
No, and you, person wearing the High Hopes shirt, will instantly become my new favorite person.
Yes.
Which is, you know, if you care about us, that's a nice thing, right?
Right,
we love you. So,
Look out for the shirts. We'll put out a link once they're all here. I think they ordered them yesterday, so they should be here soon. So
Cannot wait. And again, rate and review the podcast. And we will either be talking to you 1 week from now, or preferably an emergency pod.
Maybe Saturday.
Or maybe after the Super Bowl. Either way, can't wait. We'll talk to you guys.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.